Glad to see you all. Some of you I know. I've met with Senator Farioli before. I've not met Senator Gordley before, but I have met Senator Nelson, Senator Brown, Senator Trow, and I have not met Senator Minnis either. So it's a pleasure sort of being here today, and hopefully I can provide some information that's helpful. Okay. What I want to talk today about is a bit of the population change that's been going on in Oregon, but what I really want to talk about are the dynamics of what's going to shape the future of what Oregon looks like. Because the future will look very different than what things look like today. For the most part, we are pretty much homogeneous as a white population in the state with one of the lowest concentrations of minority members among states in the nation. But that's going to change, and it's going to change drastically. And this will affect everything in terms of what we do, especially with regards to school systems. That's where it's going to start, and then there will be our future labor force, and they're going to be the minority population, largely the ones who are going to be paying our retirement. 20 years when I hopefully get to there. I've got a 2.5-year-old, so I figure 66 and a half, I should be able to start thinking about retirement, maybe, if there's any equity in the house left. I just sort of put up some bullet points here with regard to some of the population change. I know that Paul had asked me to sort of speak about some of the regional differences, and I really don't have the time to talk about all of those regional differences. I will highlight some features as I go along and provide some other counties for examples, and if you want some future work, please contact us at the Population Research Center, and we'll see what we can do for you. I might also add, as far as I know, I'm not here asking for money, I think, which is a good thing to be here, right? Oregon grew in a variety of ways, and I'm going to talk about what absolute and relative. Absolute is actually the numbers that sort of change the population, and the relative is sort of the percentage change that goes on. So I'm going to talk about that in a variety of ways. Over the last decade, Washington County was really the big gainer out there. You know, Deschutes grew pretty rapidly. Some of the central Oregon grew pretty well, but you had some real big growth that went on, especially in Washington County and also in Clark County, which will have some effects for things I'll talk about with regard to Senator Gordley shortly. Multnomah County had some large changes, 76,000, but only had about 13% growth over the decade. So, you know, roughly in a range of about 1.3 per year. The state was running about 1.9 or so. So they were a bit behind the curve with regards to that. And Deschutes County, once again, crossed over the 100,000 mark. During the decade, we had Corvallis added as a metropolitan statistical area. If the Census Bureau had not been 2 years behind in terms of approving annexation, Bend probably would have also been a metropolitan statistical area, but the Office of Management and Budget is about to change all those definitions of what metropolitan areas are shortly here. And so when they come out with those final designations, we'll see what's up. If you look, Oregon started, I had it back to 1850, but it made other charts look different, so I figured I'd just concentrate on the last century. It goes a little bit more than twice my life, so I figured that was pretty good. Just under, you know, 500,000 at the turn of the century in 1900, but almost, you know, just over 3.4 million now. My best guess as to what we'll look like in 2010 is around 4 million, about another 600,000. We added just over, right about 600,000 during the past decade, about 580,000. You can see that we had a variety of sort of changes, the bars being sort of the absolute change, so the numbers. So between 1900 and 1910, we had roughly 250,000 Oregonians added, and the percentage change was somewhere around 63%. Large immigration waves during that period. I was up making a presentation for Steve Forrester up in Astoria one day for the Daily Astoria, and they've got a nice little Columbia thing there, so it was at OSU's food service. It was very nice, the food as well as the presentation. But large Finnish populations, I mean, they contacted Finland during the 1900s and said, please send your Finns to Oregon. They had advertisements sent throughout Northern Europe, and so there was large waves of Northern Europeans that sort of made their way, as well as people still coming across the country. So the large immigrant waves of that, we can see that during the Depression years between 30 and 40, that growth declined a bit, but that during the war years, especially with our shipyards, which brought many of the African Americans into our state, grew rapidly during the 1940s. Most of that is probably the latter half of the decade than the beginning half of it. The 50s and 60s, you know, relative change of over 200,000, just over 300,000 for the 60 to 70 period. Well, up over 500,000 during the 70s. You know, and sort of that non-city turnaround of population growth that occurred. You know, and Oregon was one of those beautiful places to move to. We all remember the economic downturn of the 1980s, the last one leaving Washington, Oregon, Northern California, and a host of other states. Please turn off the lights. And we can see that during the 1990s with economic growth, that things have turned around and, you know, we had quite a large growth. My best guess based on those, once again, is in that range of 20%. You know, that the growth will be somewhere in that sort of 15 to 20% growth, which would bring us somewhere in the range of 450,000 to 600,000 new Oregonians over this decade. So we'll be up right around that 4 million mark.
Can we stay on that slide?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Mr. Chairman, if I may. In 1900 to 1910, there was a huge immigration wave followed by three fairly flat, or at least the growth level flattened out. 1940 to 50, a big spike, followed by 2 years of growth flattening. And then 1970 to 80, a big spurt, followed by 1 year of growth flattening. 1900 to 2000, a big spurt, followed by what?
Well, I'm expecting over the next decade for it to grow very much like it did the last decade. I'm not looking for it to really have a downturn and look like it did during the 1980s. I'm expecting it to stay somewhat up. I mean, part of that will be dependent upon the decisions that are made, you know, within this governing body. You know, some of the incentives for sort of coming here or not coming here. As we all know, I mean, we have no indication that people have left the state. You know, we talk about components of migration, but we don't know what the true numbers of in and out are. We don't have any fences set around the state that we can really sort of measure and ask people, you know, are you coming? Are you moving in? You know, are you leaving the state? So we basically have what we have this residual of something called net migration. However, what migration theory does tell us is that when the economy turns down like it has in Oregon, the first thing you do is look locally. You know, as soon as the economy goes and you lose your job, you don't say, well, let's move all the way across the country and see if things are better there. You'll try to make adjustments on a local level and see if you can stay within that thing. However, if this economy were to stay bad for another year, if the predictions of Tom Potowski and yesterday released by Metro don't begin to turn around, you know, in the next couple of months, then basically you're going to, you know, you could actually contact the U-Haul and other corporations and ask them if there are more trucks heading out of the state than heading into the state. And that would give you a good indication of what's going on there. But, you know, if this really is a mild recession, as they're talking about, and even they've had some debate as to whether it really is a recession or not, or whether the period was long enough, but if things can get back to somewhat normalcy, then we should expect to see the kind of growth that we saw during the 1990s. You know,
but
if things go really economically sour, then yeah, you will see a repeat of that decade of the 1980s.
Well, but isn't, Mr. Chairman, if I could, isn't it predictable that there will be a reduction in that growth rate in out years at some point?
Yeah, well, when I get later to talk about some of the dynamics, there are two components that sort of lead to that 600,000 change in the last decade. About 400,000 of it was net migration, and 200,000 of it was natural increase. And that's the number of births minus the number of deaths. So we're going to probably grow in that natural increase sense by 200,000. It's just a matter of how much we add on top of that to get the real change that goes on.
Okay, and I guess, Mr. Chairman, Paul Warner discussed with us earlier the compression of temporal scale in terms of change, that cycles might be less volatile, that the amplitude of change might be perhaps lower amplitude but more frequent. And I guess what I see in that chart is the compression in temporal change. Mm-hmm. You know, if you see a spike and then a three-year period to the next spike, and then or a three-decade period to the next spike, and then a two-decade period to the next spike, and then a one-decade period to the next spike. I'm curious about what, you know, what I can do to perhaps just shift the graph two or three decades out and just speculate what it looks like. Mm-hmm. But I don't see it just continuing in the high 500,000s, you know, two decades or three. And there's got to be a reversal of the trend at some point.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, I was referring to the unusual nature of having a 10-year expansion. And we had from 91 to 01 without a recession.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's pretty unlikely to not have a recession until 2011. So that means you're going to see more fluctuations. But I do think that, you know, the key issue is our relative performance, particularly relative to California. And if our unemployment rate is consistently above California, gets significantly amount, then you're going to start to see people head south as they did in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
As long as we're fairly close as we are now, as George is saying, we're not seeing a lot of outward movement yet. But that would happen if we had a prolonged period in which our unemployment rate stayed above California's. The other thing to keep in mind about California is, I mean, they're 10 times bigger than we are, and they have a much younger population, and they're going to move out across this whole region. I assume George will talk about the California impact. And
I guess what I'm hearing, Mr. Chairman, is that if there's a relatively rapid turnaround and rebuilding of the economic prosperity in California, we should be able to hear a second sound of population as it moves down to take advantage of those jobs, particularly as we know that Oregon is the most affected in the recession for economic losses and unemployment. And if, you know, if Oregon maintains its position in terms of in relative terms with itself, and California rebounds quickly, we'll see that population curve fall over pretty quickly. I'm thinking.
That's possible.
Yeah, the net migration, and that's the one really tied to the economic conditions. That's the one that I'm saying will be in the range of 400,000, but it could be as low as 200,000, and maybe at 400,000, that's the high end for it if we have a good economic expansion or just stability with regards to that.
The other thing, Mr. Chairman, is that I sat in a committee, in this committee room, 2 weeks ago during the special legislative session and asked people what Oregon would feel and look like when we reached 4 million in population. I speculated that that would happen by 2007. And it seems to fall pretty closely that we'll be there. And we, you know, I don't know if we're planning on having 4 million Oregonians. You mentioned that to people.
It depends on who they are and what they look like.
Yeah, exactly.
They have capital investment.
How employable they are. Are you going to talk a little bit about demographics and the growth?
That's what I'm going to talk about, the dynamics that are sort of going to change. The, you know, part of what I talked about a minute ago with those first invest, the 200,000, after 2010, that's all going to change because that's when the baby boomers will start to turn 65. And in Oregon, about three-quarters of all deaths that occur in the state, it's more like 77%, occur to those 65 and over. So I know there are a bunch of Gen Xers and Gen Yers just waiting for all those baby boom people to leave. But we'll still be talking about them in history books. I'm one of them. That's why I know. Racial ethnic diversity in Oregon, we're adding diversity. It's still one of the least diverse states in the nation, you know, unless they compare us to like Utah or Wyoming and a couple others. The distribution of racial and ethnic groups is becoming less concentrated. For the most part, they used to be located in the urban areas, for the most part, Portland, Salem, and Eugene. To give you an example of this, a Los Angeles marketer called me up a couple of years ago and wanted to know from the 1990 census what the top 10 cities that black African Americans lived in Oregon, and number 10 was Sheridan. So that gives you the idea of the diversity of our state with regards to that population. And the Hispanics and Latinos and Asians have increased the representation much more so than the other groups, and I'll talk a bit about how that operates. I'll also talk a little bit more about the concentration nature of this, too. It's near impossible to compare racial data between the 1990 and the 2000 census. In 1990, you had to force yourself into one of five boxes. You were either white, black, Native American, Asian Pacific Islander, or other race. In the 2000 census, the Office of Management and Budget during the decade had some hearings and they changed the classifications due to the biracial nature of many Americans. They found it very difficult to force themselves into one box. While going around to public hearings, they went to the state of Hawaii and they said, well, if Alaskans are considered to be Native Americans, how come Hawaiians aren't? Which they said, well, let us split out that Asian and Pacific Islander and now call the categories Asian and the other category Native Hawaiians and Pacific Islanders. They also allowed you for the first time in Census 2000 to check all boxes that apply. This leads to, for those of us that remember our math, 2 to the K minus 1, no, 6 possible combinations. It ends up with 63 race categories that you have a possibility of having, and they actually present full detail on some of those tables.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be white alone, black alone, Native American alone, Asian alone, Pacific Islander alone, other race alone. You can be white and black, white and Native, white and Asian, and just run through those combinations.
They have
63 of them. Well, then the Hispanic origin Latino question is a separate question, so now you double it and you get to 126 possible combinations. So while we do have more diversity with regards to the responses, trying to interpret it is something else in terms of trying to find all this out.
Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
In appreciation of your comment about don't know, some of us are actually waiting for the day, living for the day when we have human race. I won't say more.
Well, actually, I think that's a good comment, because I was just sitting here thinking, when I was over in London, at this thing called the Future of Europe Trust, and then we were talking about the transition in Europe with the new currency and so on and so forth, they have racial issues there.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody has the same skin I have. And I thought it was fascinating, because when we talk about mm-hmm. different races, and we have a lot of former Eastern or Soviet bloc countries, individuals coming here, Serbians, and et cetera, who would consider themselves a different race than me. I come from German and Irish stock, but they wouldn't consider themselves the same. So I thought it was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
The Canadian and the English use more of an ethnicity than they do sort of a race, and there's no, these are self-identification, so it's also trying to sort of work some of these issues out. To give you a prime example, the Arabs are listed in the white population. Now, I doubt that post-September 11th, any of them would feel that they're treated as whites in American society. Well, that's, some of this sort of stuff. They actually have groups that actually belong in the Asian group that are listed elsewhere. So we won't talk about all of those sort of shortcomings, but there are numerous ones. These aren't directly comparable, and I'm sorry, I have notes in other tables. I didn't put one on this. They have two types of tables that they sort of produce. One was based upon race alone, and the other's based on race in combination. So this is more like a response category. So if you've ever filled out a survey where it says, what is your favorite magazine? Choose one. That's the alone. Then there's the one, check all the magazines you read. That's the second one. This has ramifications for a few of the groups in Oregon. To give you an idea of this, American Indian and Alaskan Native, if they list that only, there are 45,211, or 1.3% of the state's population. If you look at them in terms of those combinations of being American Indian alone or American Indian and something else, that 45,000 jumps up to 85,700. So there is quite a bit of biracial nature going out there. The African American population jumps from 55.7 to 72.7. So there are quite a few people that are biracial with regards to their selection of categories. So what I've put actually on the right-hand side, those representing 2,000, are actually the maximums. These are the responses. People ask me why I do that. Well, one of the responses is I've been doing some projects every now and then with Fannie Mae Corporation, and they're looking at sort of doing housing with regards to the black African-American population. And I said, you'd want to use this number because if a person claims that they're black or African-American and white and Native American or anything else they wanted to, if they can qualify under being an African-American, here's the number that would be possible that could actually come in and actually claim this. So there are some ranges. The responses actually give more of a percentage distribution, which looks much better in terms of who we are as a people than actually forcing you into one box as the alone category. The only one I've left as the alone category is largely the white non-Hispanic population, the non-Hispanic or non-Latino population. But some of the things that we can notice are the large growth in both the Asian and in the Hispanic Latino populations. These have, I gave you another table with regards to the Hispanic population for your perusal. This has ramifications for the aging of the population in a number of counties in Oregon. I mean, if you told people that Malheur County was one quarter Hispanic or Latino, I don't think most people would believe you. What you have is largely an aging white population being replaced by a younger Hispanic-Latino population. Same is true in Malheur. Hood River County, one out of every four persons are Hispanic or Latino in Hood River County. some of the largest growth that occurred in a relative sense, not an absolute sense, but a relative sense, occurred right here in Woodburn. I mean, if you look at the Hispanic population, make your way out of Portland, Portland probably has the most diverse population. In the United States, on average, two-thirds of persons who check the Hispanic or Latino category are Mexican. In Washington and Oregon, that number is about 95%, with select populations in a variety of areas. You've got a bunch of religious groups that brought basically refugee populations into the Portland metropolitan area, and also you've got a variety of people that come from things even in Hood River, where there are a variety of Central Americans working some of the fruit and orchard fields. But if you go out of Portland and head your way west and make your way over to Cornelius and then start to wrap around that belt of Donald, Aurora, and down to Woodburn, you have one of the relatively fastest growing areas for the Hispanic Latino population. It was growing so rapidly, the Census Bureau had estimated that in Washington County in 1999 there were 36,000 Hispanics or Latinos. The census came out a year later to say there were 50,000. So they weren't capturing anywhere near the kind of growth that's going on. The reason I bring this up is there will be very localized pressures with regards to these groups in specific areas. There are two ways that you can go about this. I've made numerous presentations where people have said to me, if they don't speak the language, why don't you tell them to go back to where they came from? I will give you this response. There are two ways that you can look at this. You can either look at it as being an exclusive or an inclusive society. If you wish to exclude them, that's fine. If you've been out to that sort of western area of Washington County and the Hillsborough sort of Cornelius area, or if you've actually been on Lombard up in North Portland, they have enough shingles and stuff to actually be self-sufficient. They don't have to go to the external world for many of the services that they need. They can be self-contained within their own populations and receive all the services that they actually need to get by in daily life, employment, and whatever else it might be. The matter is, how do we sort of work this sort of interplay? I'll talk later about some of these age distributions. In a county like Jefferson County, you have about 17% of the population is Hispanic, 17% of the population is Native American, and the predominant group is the white population, of course, and they're somewhere in the range of 70%. However, when you look at the school age population, it's about one-third, one-third, one-third. So this creates a completely different dynamic than what the larger sort of county, and I'm referring to the Madras school, bring those kinds of numbers up. And I'll talk in a while and show you later how these dynamics are really going to change. I mean, Senator Bunn had some comments a number of months ago with regards to, he was alarmed that there were 10% of the students that were in the school system were Hispanic or Latino. Had you been following the births for a number of years, Hispanic births are somewhere in the range of 14 to 20%, depending on how you wish to count it. Well, somewhere between one in every seven and one in every five children who are born into the state are Hispanic or Latino. And that has numerous ramifications for future educational pressures. What I'm going to do now is sort of move into some of these age dynamics to give you an idea. We talked a little bit about 400,000 residents through net in migration, 400,000 through births, and, you know, lost 273,000 Oregonians through deaths during the decade. Here's sort of what the population pyramids look like, sort of laid on top of each other. The blue bars inside here are the 1990 age distribution in five-year age groups. So this bottom bar right here, I'm looking at on this left-hand side, are the number of males, 0 to 4, and you can see it's just over 100,000. If we look on the right-hand side here, just under 100,000 for females. And then we basically, these are their ages. The clear bars represent the 2000 age distribution for the state. And if you take any of these blue bars and move them up to, that's what you would expect to see 10 years later. So you can see if we take these 20 to 24-year-old males in 1990 and age them up to 30 to 34 way out here, that there was quite a bit of net in-migration of males in these ages. So this, most of this lower part under here, you can see that we've got some prime ages sort of moving in. These are the labor force people. Scott Stewart of the Portland Multnomah Progress Board, you all might remember him from when he worked for the Oregon Progress Board, he's been analyzing the IRS income tax data, which shows flows between counties examining the IRS records. And he called me one day and he said, I'm finding these people coming to Portland from very strange places. They're coming from Champaign County, Illinois. They're coming from Dane County, Wisconsin. I said, and I can't remember the county in Iowa, I said, you're talking about the Big Ten migration out here is what you're talking about, Scott. So are there training programs they're offering which make this an attractive place to be? This is the aging of the population right here. Here's the baby boomers. You can see much more of that baby boom sort of shape in the 1990s here. Mm-hmm. I refer to that as a Coke bottle. Some students from the Metropolitan Learning Center one time informed me it looked more like a fire hydrant to them. They probably haven't seen the Coke bottles that look like this. But here's the aging of the population, and here right here, concentrating on this bar right here, these are the 55 to 59 who in 10 years will be 65 to 69. In the year 2011, all hell breaks loose. So you might want to bring back the Cascade Policy Institute person to talk about what long-term care is going to look like. Some of the things you have going for you in 11 years is term limits. No, one of the things you have going for you in 11 years
good point.
Is the fact that they'll be healthy and wealthier. You know, they talk about the baby boom generation have the largest concentration of wealth that's ever been amassed by a generation. However, that assumes everybody has it, and that's not true. So you're going to see some real have and have-not stories when you get to 2011, and I'm not kidding. When those people start to flow through, I mean, from what I heard, I'm 46, I heard in about 3.5 years, ARP starts sending me stuff. I said, I'll be 50 then. I'm not ready for that. But, you know, they start early in that political process, and when these people start to get up to those ages, you would expect to see a lot of pressures politically from them. Some people ask me about these bars right in here. They said, God, the number of aging has actually decreased. You know, does that mean people have left our state for maybe, you know, Palm Springs or somewhere else? And I said, no, that's not at all. What you have to do is think about, we're talking about the year 2000. What happened 70 years ago? Yeah, exactly, the Depression. As a consequence, there were less births. I'll try to generate a chart one time. The Census Bureau used to lay the age structure on its side and then show you these pressure points that sort of existed. You know, 1917 to 19, there was a large influenza epidemic. So you see this dip in the age distribution. Wars start. You know, there's this huge rash of births. Most people think the baby boom started in 46. It actually started in 41. You see this large spike of when dad left. And then there's a dearth of births for a number of years. And then dad returns, and that's when the baby boom sort of takes off because the war ends. Well, some of this is, like I said, due to that part of it. Well, let's move on and talk. I wanted to give you some idea of just two sort of counties I had some examples of to give you an idea of what goes on. Look at Multnomah County. We got the same number of births that occurred from the period from 1995 to 2000 that occurred from 85 to 90. About the same, even less children in the 0 to 10 range. But look at these large numbers of people where you cannot take these bars, walk up to and match them. This is part of what the Portland Public Schools have been talking about and the other people in our office who are working on the Portland Public School project. A large number of prime-age people moving into Multnomah not having children. Mm-hmm. Where they are having children, and more of that is in East County, about 162nd out. But if you look, Hawthorne looks just like Northwest 23rd. Being a sociologist, I get to call it the second Hawthorne effect. You don't remember that from your introduction.
Say Alberta Street.
Yeah, and Alberta Street may be the next one. Mm-hmm. So where is the next large group of singles going to be? But you can see that there are large numbers of people moving in at these ages with what you would think would be accompanying children, but there are no children accompanying them. Okay? Will they have their births? And if they have their births, will they move out to the suburban area? We don't know the answer to that question. All we know is there are a large number of people in these prime fertility ages that aren't having children. If you look in Northwest Portland, I do a lot of stuff specifically on Portland, there are only 1/4 of a child for every woman in that area. That's 25 children for every 100 women who live in the Northwest. That's a real dearth of children. We're in the primary.
I'm just beginning to see the number, the age numbers on the, in the bulk area, and I was born in 60, so I'm 41. Uh-huh. And the reason why I'm sort of looking at this puzzled is I thought I was the end of the baby boom, and yet there's several cohorts that are substantially larger underneath me.
Baby boom ended about 1964.
Okay.
The introduction.
So that gives me a few more years. But still, you've really got a large, down to about 20 or 25, you've got a large...
Oh, yeah, these are all new people coming into the Multnomah.
So that's in migration. That's not a reflection of baby boom stuff.
Take these, you know, any one of these, like these 25 to 29-year-olds. See this clear bar?
Uh-huh.
And walk it back to the 15 to 19-year-olds. were blue. These are all new people. I mean, you could be reborn in these ages, but we won't count them as birth.
Okay.
We'll call them as net migrant. You can see the
large people coming in to work on campaigns and technology and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the characteristic age pattern is to sort of have children, and then if they reach middle age, you're less likely to move, and then when you're sort of finishing college, you know, there's a high migration spike, and then depending on that tail, either your tail's down, you're less likely to move as you age, or there's a little hump related to sort of those retirement years.
Okay.
But what you're not capturing is those children sort of coming with those adults. They're coming without children, and not only are they not coming with children, they're not marrying any children when they get here.
Okay.
That's the other thing they have.
Well, it's kind of fascinating, too, if you just kind of briefly layer over some of the housing policies. If you look at the inner city Portland Northwest, you've got some extremely expensive properties with people who do not have children.
The other thing, I've made this comment to Mayor Katz, is that, you know, in terms of the 2040 growth plan, Portland will probably capture its housing growth, but it will not capture population growth unless something changes.
That's going to raise the question.
Persons per household is dropping so rapidly in Portland that they have to put 10,000 households online just to keep their population constant.
How do you sustain that into the future? Let's say the people living in Northwest Portland die at some point. Where does the property go? What does it become? Does it stay settled?
I would imagine they've subdivided into 6 units, some of those large old wooden structures.
And I guess that's the thing that I postulated a while back, is that we're really kind of creating a slum potentially 30 years out, because it's going to become, you cannot sustain the cost or the value of those properties, and eventually it's subdivided into lower cost housing, so to speak, and you end up getting a different population and in-migration of lower income individuals, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the mayor has another plan to develop right under 405 there in that sort of area and bring the biotech industry down. But these better be very highly paid doctors working up at OHSU if they're talking about prime real estate along the waterfront. I don't know too many families. You know, I'm a public servant. I can't move down there. So I don't know what's going to happen to that. But it would have to be a very special, tailored kind of thing to get people to be able to afford that, as well as bring their families into that area. They'd have to get rid of the power grid, too, I think. that's not an attractive thing. I can't believe they built the hotel underneath the Martin Bridge, either, but that was amazing to me.
It's a Residence Inn, isn't it?
No, it's a Marriott, or that's a biggie.
A Marriott.
Here gives you a little bit different pattern. You can see what goes on in Columbia County. As soon as they finish high school, they get out. Okay? You can see that squeeze in the middle, which you didn't see up here. But what you can see is if you look at these adults, they're all, you know, Senator Brown's age. They're bringing their middle-aged kids. See these kids? They're all coming with people a little later in that life cycle. They're not bearing the number of children, so you don't see a lot of young children, even though the population has grown in Columbia County. What you largely see, and the same is true in Yamhill. I mean, we were out in Newburgh one time, and they wanted to know why our school enrollment forecast that had been done by a predecessor umpteen years ago didn't look like what they experienced, and we talked to the superintendent at the time, and he said, well, I just moved here with my two boys that are middle school and high school. I said, oh, you're halfway to the coast, halfway to Portland, and, you know, and your family's sort of in that age where I said, you really don't migrate. Well, some people do. So that's what you have in Columbia County, those commuters sort of heading down, you know, or these people who can sort of afford that land have decided to get out of the Portland area and have middle school-age children, you know, and they're in their 40s. You get a completely different dynamic sort of going on as to what might happen here. You know, not too many birds. They get through those high school years and then they get out. Then maybe they come back in 20 years. That's completely different from the Portland or the Multnomah model that I showed a minute ago, where they're all coming in those prime ages, but the rest aren't leaving. Well, the age dynamics of race and ethnicity, we'll talk a bit about the majority of white non-Hispanic population is aging and gaining young adults through in-migration, which I talked about a minute ago. Most of those people coming into Multnomah County are people who are white, non-Hispanic, or non-Latino. The black population continues to increase. Once again, I'll talk about the shortcomings of some of what I've done here. Getting both young people and those in 30 to 50. Some of this, I think, are people who have been missed in previous censuses who showed up. Census Bureau, as a demographer, we're still waiting for them to explain how their best estimates and their best projections missed 6 million people. The count for the census was 6 million higher than what they expected to see. And they've still yet to, as you've been talking about, components or decompose where these 6 million people came from. If you throw away the fact that you can think about 3 million of being illegal aliens who suddenly decided to fill out their census form, that's still 3 million people they can't explain, which is a whole lot of people. The Native American population continues to grow, but this has a really strange dynamic. Like I said, part of the dynamic and part of the change that I'm going to talk about in these groups is sort of shaped by the fact that even if you didn't change the race questions in the census, if you would have left them the same, people change who they think they are. Well, even if we would have had the same question in 1990 and 2000, we would get different responses out of them. But we have changed the questions, so we get all kinds of sort of change going on that isn't related to birth, death, or net migration. It's related to sociological change, and that's your perception of who you see yourself to be. The Asian Pacific Islander population, I've lumped them together. For the most part, 90% of the population, over 90% of the population in Oregon are Asians and not Pacific Islanders or Native Hawaiians. They're influenced by, I put immigration. I should put in migration because some of this isn't all international that's sort of coming in. And the same is true with the Hispanic or Latino population. They used to refer to them as migrants. You know, get rid of the word migrants. They're residents. They're staying. They're not going anywhere. All that kind of language that you like to use. Hispanic Latino population is growing. In migration and fertility. If you look at their components of change, most people think that they're all sort of migrants that are sort of coming into this area, but it's first that's driving everything. First. And then I'll show you two or more races and show you how age-dependent that is. So minority representation is growing in Oregon, and especially among the younger ages. Here's the white non-Latino population. As I talk about the dominant group that sort of exists in the state, we can see these baby boomers basically aging up and seeing those sort of prime ages sort of coming in to some of this stuff that we talked about before. I won't spend much time on this because they largely shape what the total population looks like. The black African-American population is also aged. We've got some of this going on, but they're also sort of, expanding out in a variety of areas through many of these age segments. Now, this, once again, is not a proper comparison because the groups that I showed you before in terms of multiple race, whether you're black alone or black in combination, these are black alone only in this age distribution. It's only the other day that we actually were able to release where they're in combination. So I might create these again just to see what these pictures look like. If we sort of, this would be the low end, those clear bars would be the low end, the minimum number of black or African Americans, and then those responses would be the high end. If we take a look at the American Indian, once again, this is one that sort of changes, as you can tell, by the response categories relative to saying alone. That some numerous changes sort of occurred with this, but one thing is prevalent, they don't live long. Even though they're native to this state, you know, when we get to the Hispanic Latino, you don't see too many elderly. There's a number of reasons for that. One, they haven't been in the state to be large enough, long enough to age up to those ages. And secondly, you know, they might want to go back to a drier climate later in life. However, the American Indian population that sort of exists in the state are native to here. They still do, however, have high mortality rates. When we take a look at this Asian and Pacific Islander population, you can see how much it's grown, and this is using the minimum Asian and Pacific Islander definition on this, but that it's grown over all the ages, especially with regard to these prime ages in here, 25 to 29-year-olds. You cannot match those up with the 15 and 19-year-olds that were there 10 years ago. And this is, like I said, assuming that they're only one race and they're only Asian and Pacific Islander. They're not biracial in any capacity. I'll show you a later chart that you'd have to sort of decompose, as we're talking about, and throw on top of all those other groups. Here's the Hispanic Latino age distribution. 1990 almost disappears. 142% growth in the state, or 144, I'm sorry, correct me. 144% growth. We expect this to continue. Large numbers of prime age males. Look, they don't match over on the female side. Here are the economic sort of ones who come, find the jobs, and then drag the rest of the family along. Or they come alone and form a family when they're here. But here's the part I was telling you with regard to the school. Look at the size of those two bottom bars of the children. You know, in this range, we are really talking about, you know, well over 35,000 children who are 0 to 4 years of age, who are Hispanic or Latino. Now we know, you know, I won't get into all the language discussions, but they might need initial language thing. And the extent to which, as I mentioned before, you're inclusionary or exclusionary in Oregon will determine whether they pick up a language quickly or later. They have a strong desire. All the research points to the fact that they learn the language over time. They have a strong desire to actually give up their language at home. I don't know whether that's a good or a bad thing. We could debate the policy nature of that. You know, part of your goals that you've set for the schools and stuff is for children to learn languages, but if you drive one out of there at an early age and say, forget that you speak Spanish and only speak English, will they ever want to pick it up again? That's sort of a policy question to address. But we can see that they are growing numbers, especially at the young ages, and they're going to represent a larger and larger share of that school system. The last picture I'll show you here is, here's the nature of two or more races. This is heavily age-dependent. I don't know whether we could pick up some sort of effects of Vietnam eras or Korea. You know, some of these you really have to look at to see what the combinations were to sort of get at that. But one thing we know for sure at the youngest ages, these were not included in those racial pyramids that I showed earlier, just a minute ago. The Hispanic question is roughly the same from 90 to 2000, so I wouldn't worry too much about the changes in that question. They just added the word Latino and got rid of the word Spanish, which made many Hispanic and Latinos, because it's already in Hispanic anyway, much better about answering that question. We can see the biracial nature. I mean, there are numerous people in there who have, you know, a mother of one race, a father of another, and when you force them into one box, they can't answer it. So this time around, they get to say, guess what? Mom's white, dad's black, I'm biracial, I'm both of these things. But we can see how that's much more, you know, heavily graded for the children than it is for any of their parents. And it's growing. It's going to continue to look like it. You know, this is probably the only one we call these population pyramids, the only one that actually looks like a pyramid. It doesn't look like, I said, the Coke bottles and stuff. Here's what it looks like when you compare the dominant group, the white alone, non-Hispanic or Latino, and minority. That's all others. I take the total, subtract the white, non-Hispanic, not Latino, and then I'm left with sort of what that looks like in the middle there. So you can see that there aren't too many at the elderly ages, but that it really starts to grow, especially as you get to those younger ages. And as the dominant population is losing sort of people in these earlier ages, you know, here's 10 years of less births. They're the ones who are growing and going to replace them. Now, in 50 to 100 years, could we look like California and look like this? Here's your legislators, one of my lifetimes away from here. We'll take us out to the year 2045 or 2050 or so. And look at this, it's California. Look at California's interesting policy question. If you support our old age programs, and that's for all boomers on, right? We'll support higher minimum wage payments so that you can actually pay for our retirement. And we'll help support the schools, because they are a minority from age under 40 on. They might dominate this group. They actually don't dominate, as they're not actually not more than 50% of the population in California. They are the largest group. However, they are not a majority of the population. And we can see by this picture, at that part of the age distribution, they aren't at all. So that will lead to completely different dynamics in terms of politics and other things. But how soon will Oregon get there? I don't know. But I can tell you that the Hispanic and Latino population will continue to grow. I can tell you that the Asian populations will continue to grow rapidly. You know, and then it's a matter of what happens in some of these other age segments that really sort of, you know, mean something. I mean, just look at the dynamics of here. This is a high in-migration, you know, immigration and in-migration kind of thing. And this one's sort of coming from this, from the floor on up. Well, this is where they're going to continue. They're going to hit you first in the school systems, you know. These people, for the most part, are having some births, you know, in this Asian population, but mostly it's sort of, you know, college. A lot of them come to Southern Oregon University. Part of the nature of why you made the change and put the U on the N rather than the C was to attract some of them. Secondly, with regard to this one, you know, they're in the labor force. And we can see this increase for all groups at all their ages. And this is using the minimum number. But the dynamic of this one is completely different from, you know, this one. You know, and this one, it's hard to tell, and it's hard to tell what's going on with the, you know, black or African-American population. But we do know that this dominant group is having less and less of the birth. With that, I'll conclude, and if you have any further questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Actually, I'm kind of fascinated by your discussion and how it might relate to public policy. I mean, this is the first time I think we've had, like, eight terms in this legislature. an actual presentation by your organization. We've always heard about the Population Research Center, but it seems to me it would be fascinating for, you know, some of the like the health care committees and others to look at some of these demographics and have them kind of reduced into things to consider. Because I mean, not only are we looking at racial issues in terms of the abstract, here's this population we may not be familiar with or we may be familiar with, but here's what it may mean in terms of how you deal with schools or how you deal with health care or whatever.
Also, that white non-Hispanic one of the interesting ones we'll get to answer later this summer, the question in Portland is where are all the Russians? I don't know if you've driven out into your area, you know, where Sandy slams into I-84 there. I was doing that, I don't know, about a year ago with the kids in that Russian Orthodox church was standing, I'm like, oh, my.
It is an interesting thing because, when I started in politics in East Multnomah County in 1984, when I walked precincts, they were largely white Anglo-Saxon individuals. Few minorities. This last election, I walked in the very same areas.
Oh, Rockwood, your area?
Well, Rockwood is my area, but actually I'm talking about Park Rose, the R.D. Terrace area, which was one of the more affluent neighborhoods. Houses were pretty much the same. People were very different. A lot of Asian, black, Hispanic, just you name it, they were there. Russian families, whatever. The houses, they all looked the same. Same nice neighborhoods, different people, different occupations. And I was walking through the neighborhood, I was kind of stunned by that transition.
And the whole Park Rose has changed. One of the things I wanted to address for Senator Gordley, too, is part of the, you know, the question with regard to is gentrification a good or a bad thing? Mm-hmm. And that's a policy question, and people can analyze this to death. But one of the things we've noticed from some preliminary analysis that we've been doing is the black African-American population has spread. They've spread into East County, they've jumped across the border, and they're out in Washington County. So that's, as I mentioned before, I sort of had that, I want to talk about the dispersal kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's no longer sort of a North Portland kind of phenomena anymore. It's actually spreading out, you know, but it's still mostly contained sort of along that corridor kind of thing. But, you know, there has been a large dispersion of some of the groups. Will it remove the identity? I mean, some people call me up from other states and go, God, you're a segregated city. And I go, what? If all your blacks live in one area, I go, with the geography that we have in Oregon, if we dispersed them and allowed equally, you wouldn't see them anywhere because we have such a large piece of geography. So I said, where do you, you know, as my old professor Johnny Butler used to say, where do you call it an ethnic enclave? Where do you call it segregation where you can't move anywhere? So, I mean, do you lose identity by pulling yourself across the entire region? But in this case, I think we have growth, and I don't know whether housing forced people out. We can talk about that for renting, but also people who got to sell their homes had equity they would have never thought about having before. So, you know, these are sort of two sides of the coin that you can toss up forever and ever.
I mean, it is fascinating because I grew up, went to school in inner city Portland, a fairly homogeneous black population in the Albina community. Today, that's not necessarily the case, but when you go out to Rockwood, mm-hmm. there's an almost homogeneous, not quite, but it's getting there, Hispanic population in the Rockwood area. It's kind of an interesting transition in terms of, and definitely having an effect on the school districts,
mm-hmm.
how to deal with those populations where language issues and cultural issues and such.
Yeah, especially being born up as well as coming in like this. I mean, it can really sort of impact the school district. They're the ones who see it the quickest. I mean, it's an immediate impact.
And it relates to law enforcement, too. I mean, Senator
Gordon That's right.
is familiar with this, how the law enforcement community deals with various populations in Rockwood, of course. I had some well-publicized gang shootings that they're not the Crips and the Bloods now. They're the 13th Streeters and 18th Streeters. And, you know, some literally, interestingly, some derivatives of some of the L.A. County Hispanic gangs that there are generational memberships associated with, which is kind of fascinating. But chatting about these kind of presentations, have you served on some of the healthcare committees? Or anything?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this kind of presentation would be valuable?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. This is the driver to public policy of the 21st century. If we don't understand this, we're going to make some huge mistakes.
That's the fascinating thing to me is that things are changing very dramatically. A lot of the assumptions I had about who I was and what the world looked like are different today.
Mm-hmm.
Just in terms of the economy and people and who my neighbors are and everything else.
We will also miss some opportunities, and they're huge within these demographics.
All right.
I also have presentations on these if you two would be interested. I haven't set up your area yet, but I will. I have one for the Portland metropolitan area, which includes Clark County in it, that I did for PCC, and then I also have another one that breaks down Multnomah County itself that I did for the Multnomah County Health Department.
Mm-hmm.
So if you'd be interested in seeing those and break it into those regions or areas, whatever they call Portland, when they break it up into six pieces or whatever.
Okay. Great. Mm-hmm. Any other questions, concerns, issues? Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you want to talk about any future meetings? Or?